بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. عظم الله أجورنا وأجوركم بمصابنا بسيدنا ومولانا أبي عبد الله الحسين عليه السلام، وجعلنا الله وإياكم من الطالبين بثأره بين يدي الإمام المنصور المؤيد المهدي من آل محمد. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا وعظيمنا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع نفوسنا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين وأصحابه الغر الميامين. الحمد لله الذي جعلنا من المتمسكين بولاية سيدي ومولاي علي بن أبي طالب. اللهم صل على الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. أما بعد، تطأك الخيول بحوافرها. The first of our salawat in honor of Rasulullah Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. The second known of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. The third with your loudest voices in honor of the Imam of our time, Imam Sahib al-Asri wa al-Zaman. Respected scholars, brothers and sisters, salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Discussion concerning the laws of mutilation in Islam is one of the most important legal discussions within the religion. Indeed, when a person sees a body mutilated, it's one of the most disturbing sights for any human being. If you look in the past 10 years or so with the amount of wars that have taken place, you find that it became normal for us to see bodies which were cut into pieces, to see people who were beheaded with their heads paraded, to see people who actually were smiling while cutting up these bodies. This, of course, is known as mutilation and highlights a separate area in terms of the ethics of war, which is the ethics after you have ended a war. At the beginning of our discussion, we looked at jus ad bellum, jus in bello. Now we go to jus ad postum. In Latin, what are the ethics of how you behave after a battle has ended? The battle of Karbala ended on the afternoon of the 10th of Muharram. But then you find that there are a number of ethical lessons to be learnt, especially in the laws of mutilation. Because we know that mutilation can be divided into two. The first type of mutilation is self-mutilation, meaning that a person may seek to harm their own self, their own body. Indeed, this self-mutilation in itself is disturbing. Many times the Shia, if you look online, are accused of self-mutilation. When a person looks at Karbala today, they find there are many who have picked up a sword and struck their head with this sword. Some call it Qamazani, others call it Tatbir. And when you look at that, you find that that is a form known as self-mutilation. Or some call it self-flagellation. Every Muharram, when we come to the month of Muharram, we find that people ask us, why do you Shia pick up swords and hit your head with blood everywhere on your face? Or why do you Shia pick up a chain and slash your back with knives in trying to commemorate the message of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam? This, of course, is on one level a diversion, meaning that they want to ask you, without asking you the key questions relating to Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, that there are many in the world today you'll find, instead of asking about Imam al-Husayn, or acknowledging even Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, you'll find them talking about, for example, Nabi Musa alayhi salam and the children of Israel on this day. But the reality remains that when a person asks you, is this part of the path of Ahlul Bayt or no? We know that there wasn't a single Imam of Ahlul Bayt who picked up a sword and struck his head with that sword. I defy anyone out there to show me, from the time of Imam al-Husayn until the time of Imam al-Askari, not even a single Imam of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam who picked up a sword and self-mutilated. Therefore, you found Ayatollah al-Sistani, may Allah lengthen his life, when being asked on these issues, says that if a person harms the image of the religion of Islam, or if a person harms themselves, yes, then that is not something which is acceptable. Anyone who is a follower of the path of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam is somebody who should ensure that when it comes to self-mutilation, they try their hardest to honor and preserve the message of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. Naturally, there are those out there who may follow other maraji's opinions on this area. There are those who will say that, okay, I want to do zinjir, or I want to do qamazani or tatbir, because I follow other maraji, I may not follow Ayatollah Sistani's opinion. The ultimate point is that in the world of the internet, when we come to this world, the world is so small now. What's happening today in Karbala is with us in Toronto in a split second. On our phones, we're able to view every minute of the 10th of Muharram. I ask you that when we have this on our phones and are seeing people who self-mutilate, opening up their head and shouting, Haydar, Haydar, of course, those who do it will call out Haydar. They will say that I'm trying to honor Imam Ali alayhi salam, because Imam Ali is the one who is Haydar and he was struck on his head. Those who slap themselves with the chain say that I'm honoring Sayyida Zainab alayhi salam, because Sayyida Zainab was whipped after Karbala. So they say this is my way of honoring, because the Quran says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, قُلْ لَا أَسْأَلُكُمْ عَلَيْهِ أَجْرًا إِلَّا الْمَوَدَّةَ فِي الْقُرْبَى. I do not ask from you anything except love for my family. So they say that when I'm doing zinjir, I'm doing qamazani, my niyyah is to show love for the family of the Prophet, peace be upon his family. I don't want to look down at such people. These are lovers of Hussein alayhi salam. But all we can say is what our maraji' guide us, that if you're harming the image of the religion of Islam, say one of your friend now comes to you and says, why do you Shia do this? I don't want to reply by saying it's wajib, because it's not wajib, it's not obligatory. Yes. Even there are those who say it's not even recommended. Recommended in the school of Ahlul Bayt is to hold majalis, for example. Recommended is to have noha, poetry, that we have within the likes of Da'bal bin Ali al-Khuza'i and others. Recommended is to give out food. That is recommended. Recommended is to recite the Quran. That is recommended. Recommended is to cry. That is recommended. Recommended, not just to cry, to choke while you're crying. There are those who may go 10 nights without crying, not even a single tear. If their mom died, or their dad died, they'll cry straight away. If they hear the message of Imam al-Husayn, they may not cry. This could be for different reasons. Some may not cry because the amount of sin that we commit blocks our heart from appreciating Imam al-Husayn. To appreciate the divine representatives of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to appreciate those who were chosen by God, I can't be sinning the whole year and then expect in Muharram to suddenly cry. If I don't wake up for Fajr, and I can't pray Salat al-Fajr, and then I want to have a relationship with the man who protected Salat al-Fajr, there's no way I'm going to cry. The one who cries is the one whose heart is open, getting closer to Ahlul Bayt. Crying is recommended. Choking is recommended in terms of crying while wailing Ahlul Bayt, say it. But When it comes to these things, the chains and the striking of the sword, you find that Ahlul Bayt never practiced these actions at all. Someone says, even if they didn't, we practice it because we're showing love. It's better that we stick on what Ahlul Bayt teach us. I don't want to accuse other religions or other schools of Islam saying, bid'ah, you have innovations, when I myself may have certain innovations. But I repeat that those who do strike themselves with the chain or the swords, I am no one to come and judge them. I don't know their intention. All I'm saying, in my position, and I hope people appreciate that in my position, if you look at me, all of you here, I'm one person you're looking at, whereas I see a few people. If you put that as the metaphor for our positions, then I see that this is doing us more harm than good. There is good, but there's more harm at the moment because blood is now associated with ISIS, with Al-Qaeda, with terrorism. About 40 years ago, there were people who did this and it was revealed. So therefore, self-mutilation is in that level. Then there is also, when it comes to someone asks circumcision, for example, and female genital mutilation in the world today, one of the biggest oppressions is against women who have their genital areas mutilated in Africa, in India. There is female genital mutilation. In Islam, we have that there is a certain cut that can be done, which we call circumcision. Yes, khitan is an act which can be done. And that act which can be done, it is mustahab to do it on the seventh day. Wajib? No. Mustahab. When a person reaches bulugh, it becomes wajib taklifi. Meaning what? Someone who's circumcised, not circumcised, can they pray? Yes. Can they do hajj? No. Person who's not circumcised, you can pray, you can do the wajibat, but hajj, you have to be circumcised to do tawaf. If a person is not circumcised of the men, then you find that that person cannot do hajj. The other wajibat can be done. Someone says, when I have a baby, after 7 days, I go to the local doctor and we circumcise that baby. That's not obligatory for you to circumcise them after 7 days. But naturally, it makes sense that while the baby is at that age, it's going to be less in terms of its understanding and connection with pain than if a person does it at bulugh. At bulugh, if a person does this, then of course they are able to act their prayers and everything. But when it comes to hajj, say someone converts to Islam. When they convert, you find people rushing to them that you have to circumcise. Okay. When you come to these people, and these are fundamental points on this area, because people think that when someone converts, if they haven't circumcised, they can't pray. No, you can pray. But when they want to come with you to hajj, and you have to tell them that they must be circumcised. In terms of woman, again, with woman, there is a circumcision mentioned in Shi'i literature. This is mustahab, and even mustahab on the level of matruk now. There's this what we call khafth. This khafth that takes place is a circumcision of a certain part of the female. Circumcision doesn't mean taking mutilation of that part. Mutilation of that part is not part of the teachings of Islam. There may be a certain snip that's done, like with the male, but not mutilation. What we see in parts of Africa where there are girls with absolutely no choice whatsoever, forced to have female genital mutilation, that is something not part of the teachings of the religion of Islam. If you do find these traditions, then they are no way connected to the idea that the whole of the female area is meant to be cut. Yes, there may be other schools in Islam, and you can refer to the Shafi'i opinion, the Hanafi opinion, the Maliki opinion, the Hanbali opinion, but in our school, there's no such thing as female genital mutilation. Someone says, okay, a mutilation is something not allowed. How then do we get organ donation? And bear with me on these minor points. Organ donation, someone says, if you can't mutilate a body, how can I donate my body part? Because many people ask, organ donation is allowed in Islam or not allowed? There's a difference between qat'a and shaq. Yes. You may completely sever an area, mutilate it, or you may make an incision. Incision in Islam is allowed. That's not mutilation. You're not ripping up a body and cutting it up like you are cutting up a sheep. Incision in Islam, there's no problem. If, for example, now a mother dies and her baby dies with her, an incision is made to allow the baby out. That's not mutilation. Or someone stole something from you. They died. That thing is in their body somewhere. I don't know. They stole a watch and they decided to eat it just before you got to them, in the hope that somehow that watch was going to come out later on. That person, are we allowed to make an incision, a cut? Yes, you are. From that door, ulama, originally when they looked at mutilation, some said organ donation was problematic because of mutilation, and mutilation of a body in Islam is something not allowed. Others said, no, if an incision is allowed, then organ donation can be allowed. Ayatullah al-Sistani, may Allah lengthen his life, and Ayatullah al-Khu'i, may Allah bless his soul. They both believe that organ donation was allowed while you are alive. Ayatullah al-Khu'i stipulates the minor organs, those that can regenerate themselves. Ayatullah Sistani says, as long as you're not handicapped by donating an organ, then you can while you're alive. After you die, Ayatullah al-Khu'i allows organ donation, Ayatullah Sistani doesn't. After you die, someone might write in their will that I want to donate a certain organ. Ayatullah al-Khu'i says what? He says that this is something which is permissible. Again, there is discussions in terms of the minor and the major. Ayatullah Sistani and Ayatullah Jawad al-Tabrizi, may Allah bless his soul, did not allow organ donation after someone has died. Ayatullah al-Khu'i says, if you've written in your will that I want it donated, then there's no issue. Ayatullah Sistani, no. Ayatullah Khamenei says, yes, it's allowed to donate after you die, as long, and here's his condition, as long as there is no mutilation of the body. Why? Because Islam said the body was sacred. You're not meant to mutilate a body. The question arises, this mutilation of bodies that we see with ISIS, where they pick up a body, they rip it up, they cut the hands. We know that mutilation is only the act of a cannibal. Yes, when today people ask us, Islam allows mutilation of dead bodies, we reply no. They say, how comes Muslims do it? Muslims and Islam are two opposite things. But where did this originate? That's the first question. Secondly, how did the Holy Prophet say don't do it? Thirdly, how did Imam Ali, just before he died, highlight mutilation of a dead body is not allowed? Fourthly, how is it that the Umayyads are the basis of mutilating a dead body? And fifthly, on the afternoon of the 10th of Muharram, how did they mutilate the body of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam? Let's examine this and dissect the topic in depth. The first mutilation of a dead body in Islam was when? Was the body of Hamza, the grandfather of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, yes? Hamza, there were three who wanted him killed on the day of Uhud. Who were the three? First, the daughter of Harith ibn Nawfal, because her dad had been killed at the Battle of Badr. The second was Jubair, the son of Mut'im, because his uncle Tughaym ibn Adi had been killed on the day of Badr. The third was Hind, mother of Muawiyah, because her dad and her brother had all been killed on the day of Badr. These three swore that if Hamza, the uncle of the Prophet, if the slave by the name of Wahshi kills him, they'll reward Wahshi and they'll free him. Naturally, if you're a slave at that time, you look forward to that incentive. Sadly, many of these slaves were not treated well. In the coming nights, I'm going to look at prisoners of war and the treatment of a prisoner of war. Some of these slaves were not treated well. Wahshi, he felt that this was an opportunity, that if I kill Hamza, then I will make sure that I'm freed. You found that these three, Harith's daughter, Jubair, as well as Hind, were waiting patiently. Wahshi had told them, I'll kill Muhammad, changed his mind. Told them, I'll kill Ali, could not get near Imam Ali. What did he do? He threw his spear directly on the chest of Hamza. When he threw his spear, in the Arab mentality, if you killed somebody, that's it, the person's dead, their tribe, their qabila will come and take them. They'll take them away and they'll go home. Even if you were the worst of Arabs, you still had this belief that, look, someone's dead, leave them alone. They belong to another Arab tribe. Even Imam Ali, when he killed Amr ibn Wadi al-Amr, he did not mutilate his body. Let him alone. He could go back with his sister. What happened with Hamza was when the battle finished, the first thing they did was they ripped his clothes off his body. Yes. They ripped his clothes off his body. When they ripped his clothes off his body, after that, the narrations differ as to who came. But Sayyida Zainab does not differ. Sayyida Zainab, when she stood in front of Yazid, she made it clear to him when she said in her famous sermon, and for all our brothers and sisters, try and memorize the sermon of Zainab versus Yazid. That sermon of Zainab highlighted that Islam never felt any man was above any woman. Because it highlighted that that lady could shake the whole empire. When she said, "Man lahadafu akbad al-askiya," when she said at that moment in front of Yazid, that, "Oh Yazid, you are someone who was born from the flesh of the martyrs and from someone who chewed the liver of the noble." Yazid's grandmother is who? Hind. When Sayyid Azayyid, because there are people who'll come and tell you, Hind did not touch yet Hamza's body. Because you know, they say Hind later became religious. Hind later became religious, mashallah. In your life as a human, a cannibal, they become religious later on. A cannibal. Ya'ani Hannibal Lecter, wallah, he'll turn around today. He'll be like, "You guys make another Silence of the Lambs the day I became a Muslim." Yes, honestly. And even if I say this now, people will say, "Well, you know what? This..." No. I don't need to listen to your sources. You don't construct my narrative. I don't care what it says in your books. I don't care. Because someone tells me it's not in our books that Hind did this. I can't find this in Sahih al-Bukhari or in Sahih Muslim or al-Mustadrak of al-Hakim. Yes, Hamza got killed, but it doesn't say Hind. It doesn't really make a difference to me. I don't care about your literature. Why should you construct narrative? Why can't I? For years, we lived under taqiyya. We couldn't speak. Now, there's no constructing narrative from you anymore. I construct the narrative. And let's play a game now. Because now when I construct the narrative, I use my Shia literature now. I don't need to rely on yours. Why should I rely on yours? Get this inferiority complex out of us. Get this inferiority complex out of us. Is it in the books of other schools in Islam? I don't care. Is it in Sayyida Zainab? That's all I care about. Does Imam al-Baqir say it? That's all I care about. Does Imam al-Sadiq say it? That's all I care about. I don't care if it's not written in your books. Your books are pro-Umayyid and pro-Abbasid in their love for the enemies of Al-Muhammad. Yes. For me, Sayyida Zainab made it clear to Yazid that you, oh Yazid, you were born from the flesh of the martyr and from those who chewed the liver. She came to Hamza's body. She said to him, "Cut it up for me." And when she came and said, "Cut it up for me," Wahshi came, he cut up the body of Hamza. This is those who came and led Islam, their moms. She came, she then took the liver and began to eat it. The liver of the uncle of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon his family, was chewed by her. She was eating the liver. And then later on, she made a necklace out of Hamza's body parts. Do you know this broke the heart of Rasulullah? Yes. Because imagine the Holy Prophet had to come and see his uncle's body. A, with no clothing. Safiya, Hamza's sister, went and bought a cloth to cover her brother's body. B, the Holy Prophet done the funeral rites for Hamza. And C, do you know it wasn't just Hind who mutilated his body? Muawiyah, son of Mughira, Abu Sufyan, all of them ripped his body like how a person devours a piece of meat. Yes. When Rasulullah saw this, he came back to Medina. The first thing he said, why do I not hear people crying for my uncle? When we cry in Majalis, someone says, you Shia, you cry so much. These tears are of no benefit. On the contrary, this is the sunnah of the Prophet. When he returned to Medina, he said, why are the people not crying? My uncle's body has been mutilated. And doesn't that bring a tear? Sa'ad bin Ma'ad decided, we'll do a majlis for Hamza alayhi salam. He told all the women of the Ansar, all of you, this is what happened, like a musibah, like na'i, like this. He decided, people started crying. Then they wore black. Zainab, the daughter of Abu Salama, wore black because people ask, why do we wear black when we come to Majalis al-Husayn? This is not culture, this is religion. Zainab, the daughter of Abu Salama, wore black. We wear black when we come to Majalis al-Husayn alayhi salam. Proudly we wear this black. Then they organize majalis. Someone says, and the food that we give out, is this culture or religion? Ahlul Bayt, when Ja'far al-Tayyar died, Fatima al-Zahra cooked food to help Asma bint Umays. I hear people saying today, why do we cook food? Let's give money to the poor. Why don't you do both? What is it? It's an equation of philosophy at Cambridge. What is it? Give food to the poor. You give to the poor. 1 + 1 = 2. Don't stop the food in Majalis al-Husayn alayhi salam. This is tabarruk for us. This is an honor for us. Rasulullah, therefore, the first mutilation. Some of the companions said that we're going to mutilate 30 of theirs. This is a very interesting point. Because the Quran in Surah 16 verse 126 said, وَإِنْ عَاقَبْتُمْ فَعَاقِبُوا بِمِثْلِ مَا عُوقِبْتُمْ بِهِ. If you are attacked, then attack the way you were attacked. But then the Quran said, وَلَئِنْ صَبَرْتُمْ لَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لِلصَّابِرِينَ. But if you have sabr, patience, it's better than mutilating others. Why? Because some of these men were saying, if they did that to Hamza, let's do that to their men. And Rasulullah turned around and said, no, a principle is set. They do bad to us, we do not do bad back to them. Because we are the people of morality, of ethics. The Quran said, وَإِنْ عَاقَبْتُمْ فَعَاقِبُوا بِمِثْلِ مَا عُقِبْتُمْ بِهِ. But then the Quran said, وَلَئِنْ صَبَرْتُمْ. If you have sabr, it's not easy. Imagine you're Hamza's daughter or you're Hamza's son. Is it easy for you to have sabr? Your dad's body cut like a sheep? Is it easy? And that's why Imam al-Husayn stood on the 10th of Muharram and said, is not Hamza my great uncle? Why did he say that? Because he was reminding them that you people think you're on Islam. Which Islam? An Islam that ends up killing and butchering women and children and mutilation? You found, therefore, the Holy Prophet, peace be upon his family, made a clear statement that mutilation was not allowed. And likewise, who made the statement? Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, salawatullah wa salamu alayhim. Allahumma salamu wa alayhim. Imam Ali, when Ibn Muljam struck him, Abdul Shaytan, Ibn Muljam struck Imam Ali on the night of the 19th, on 19th and Fajr. When he struck him, Imam died when? 21st of Ramadan. Yes. When Imam wrote his will, he said, don't shed the blood of the Muslims because I am dead. If his one strike on my head kills me, then strike him once. And do not mutilate his body. Why? This is a principle. Look at Ahlul Bayt's ethics. For the Holy Prophet said, do not mutilate even the body of a dog which has rabies. If there's a dog out there in the street, and the dog has rabies, you sometimes find that there are children, they'll pick up small lizards, or insects and they'll start cutting them up. This is haram. Ahlul Bayt don't want you to grow into that character. The Holy Prophet Imam Ali says, don't kill Ibn Muljam and mutilate his body. Kill him with one strike. If I die from his one, you kill him with one. Not two, not 10, not 15. One. That's it. And then after that, never, ever, ever mutilate the body of a human being. For mutilation of a body of a human, for the Prophet said, I don't like to see the body of a dog with rabies mutilated. If I see a dog in my city and it looks ill, someone might say, you know what, let's shoot this dog and cut it up. No, that dog is a creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The human, creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. All within the ethics of Ahlul Bayt. Therefore, who started this? The Umayyads. And how they continued it. Where did they continue it? By mutilating the bodies of the lovers of Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam. When? At Karbala? No! 20 years before Karbala. What was the first head to be paraded in the streets? In these coming nights, tomorrow night, my dear brothers and sisters, tomorrow, Sayyida Zainab is in Kufa tomorrow. But she has heads on spears in front of her. Why are we continuing Majalis until Saturday? Because Karbala has just begun. Karbala didn't finish today. Now, Zainab's film begins. Tomorrow, they are in Kufa. Saturday is the burial of Imam al-Hussein. Which means Imam al-Hussein's body lay in Karbala for 3 nights with no one to bury him. The narrations mention that these heads on spears, people ask, where did this begin? This began with Amr bin Hamaq al-Khuza'i, companion of Imam Ali, lover of Ahlul Bayt. They beheaded him, they put his head on a spear, like ISIS. And they paraded the head. I ask you, you see a head of a human, blood everywhere. How could you parade and smile when you're doing it? Because your mom was a cannibal. Your mom was a cannibal. She has body parts of humans in her. What's that going to produce? In Islam we say, a mother who eats halal, even she has a test with her kids, let alone a mom who eats humans. What we eat, we are what we eat. They paraded Amr bin Hamaq al-Khuza'i in the streets. Rushad al-Hajari, companion of Imam Ali. You know what the Umayyads did to him? Cut his feet, cut his hands, cut his tongue, gorged everything. And his daughter Ghanwa had to carry his body in the middle of the street. Another. Hujr bin Adi, Ammar bin Yasir. They took Ammar's tongue out and they put a spear through the tongue. And people ask me, these ISIS, where do they come from? Al-Qaeda, where do they come from? Boko Haram, where do they come from? Do you know what was amazing about Imam al-Hussein? Because people say Imam al-Hussein saved Islam. Do you know what that means? Umayyad still continued for 60 years after Imam al-Hussein. So how did he save Islam? He showed us the difference between true ethical Islam and fake Islam. Imam al-Hussein saved Islam, but the Umayyads continued after him. 67 years after Karbala, the Umayyads were in power until the Abbasids overthrew them. How did he save Islam then? He reminded us there is an Islam of Ahlul Bayt and an Islam of oppression. An Islam of ethics and an Islam of tyranny. An Islam on the basis of the principles of the Holy Prophet and an Islam on the basis of the principles of Muawiyah and the children of Muawiyah. That's how he saved Islam. فَبَدَلَ مُهْجَتَهُ فِيكَ لِيَسْتَنْقِضَ عِبَادَكَ مِنَ الْجَهَالَةِ وَحَيْرَةِ الضَّلَالَةِ. He sacrificed, Imam al-Sadiq does Ziyarat al-Arba'een of Imam al-Hussein in a few weeks. Imam al-Sadiq says he sacrificed himself for you. So he saved your community from being ignorant and misguided. Why do I cry for Aba Abdullah? Because if it wasn't for Aba Abdullah, I would also be one of those who mutilates. I'd also be one of those who beheads and finds it normal to behead. But Aba Abdullah taught me that, you know what, that is not our way. But the sadness of all sadnesses is that they did it to him on the 10th of Muharram. Because in the eyes of many, when you ask them, Imam al-Hussein died when? They say to you, 10th of Muharram, Ashura. You ask them, And what happened after to his body? Many don't know. Many don't know. May Allah give patience to Fatima al-Zahra. Because you know what they did? They beheaded him. The first thing they did, like they did with Hamza, is they ripped his clothes off his body. The shirt that Sayyidah Zainab had given him was ripped now. And one man came to the holy body of Imam al-Hussein, and Sukaina from far is saying, leave him. Don't touch my father. Can you imagine a young girl sees her dad and she's calling out, please don't touch my father. A man came, and this was the first mutilation that took place. He saw the ring of Rasulullah on the finger of Hussein. He tried to pull it out, he couldn't. He tried again, he couldn't. He got his knife out and he chopped the finger of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Look at this tragedy. Imagine. And your tears today, if you have tears for your mom and dad when they die, tonight is if you realize who's more important, your parents or Imam al-Hussein. Tonight is the night. If you really appreciate that what Imam did for you in Karbala made you who you are, this is your night. They took his finger and they ripped the finger. They cut the finger and took the ring of Rasulullah. And from far, Ruqayya says, leave my father, please leave him. But then after that, Umar bin Sa'd turned around to his horses. Horse riders were standing there. Mukhtar al-Thaqafi caught them years later. Some people say, why did Mukhtar mutilate? Mukhtar is not a hujjah on us. He's not ma'soom. But he may use the verse, وَإِنْ عَاقَبْتُمْ فَعَاقِبُوا. So you find that Mukhtar al-Thaqafi, what did he do? He caught them. He said, what did you do on the 10th of Muharram? They said, we were 10 horse riders. We were standing, the battle had finished. Umar bin Sa'd turned around to us. He said, do me something. They said, one. He said, sharpen the hooves of your horses. Allahu Akbar. Hamza used to be called Sayyid al-Shuhada. When Karbala came, there was the main Sayyid al-Shuhada. Because even with Hamza, what they did to him, this they didn't do to him. Sharpen the hooves of your horses. They sharpened them. He said, oh horse riders, and listen to what he says. He says, oh horse riders of Allah. This is when Shaitan takes over your heart, you can't see anymore. Oh horse riders of Allah. Be prepared for the mercy of Allah and get ready now to trample on the chests. Allahu Akbar. In Dua Arafah a year before, he had spoken about the rib. It was dear to him because he had seen his mom's rib broken. He said, who shall we trample on first? He said to them, trample on the companions of Hussein. The Arabs, there were tribes of the army of Imam al-Hussein. Some of their cousins were in the army of Yazid. So you could be from one family, you have a cousin on one side, a cousin on the other. Layla, Ali al-Akbar's mom, her uncle was Muawiyah. Umm al-Banin, her cousin was Shimr. Others. So he said, trample on the bodies of the companions. They began to ask him who. He said, for example, trample on Habib ibn Madahir's body. He had cousins on that side. So they came out, they said, listen, you've killed our son. Don't humiliate by kicking his body around like a football in our language. He said, okay, very well. Muslim bin Awsaja. They tribe on the side of Yazid. Okay, very well. Hur bin Yazid Riyah. Ben Uriah said, no chance. We're taking his body. You killed him? Enough. There is no way horses are going to kick our boy's body around. He's our enemy. We killed him. No more. Went through all these companions, but they were fortunate. they had representatives. He said, trample on the bodies of the family members of Hussein alayhi salam. Who, said Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas, I ask all of you, what was left of Abbas's body? What's left? The eye is gone. The arms are gone. What's left of Abbas? Those of you who've been to the shrine of Abbas, take your heart there. Tonight is a night you release your love. What was left of Bab al-Hawa'ij? But his mom, related to Shimr, said, leave him. Who then? Qasim, the Fazaris were on the side of Yazid, said, leave our son. You killed him. That's enough. Leave it. Ali al-Akbar, his mom Layla, Muawiyah's her uncle, Yazid's her first cousin. Leave Akbar alone. He then called out, is there anybody that lies on the ground whose mother and father's tribe are not here to represent him? They said to him, only one body lies on the ground. May Allah give sabr to Imam Sahib al-Zaman. Yes. One body lies on the ground. His mother Fatima is not there. And his father Ali is not there. And the narrations mention that at that moment he said, then what are you waiting for? At that moment all the horse riders rode their horses and they began to trample on the holy body of Aba Abdullah, kicking the body one side to the other. When you read the line, تَطَعُكَ الْخُيُولُ بِحَوَافِرِهَا, it gives you the indication that they began to kick the body of Aba Abdullah across the plains of Karbala. Today when you go Ziyarat al-Hussein, you see that where he was beheaded is one side, but then 20 yards away is where he's buried. They kicked his body around the plains that they didn't leave a part of the body untouched. Had Hamza been at Karbala, he would have said, they didn't even do that to my body on the plains of Uhud. The narrations mention that Sayyidah Zainab was in the tents on a night like this. She turned around to Imam Zain al-Abidin. She said to him, my nephew, I hear something breaking. Tell me, what is it that breaks? He turned around to her and he said to her, my auntie, have patience. Those are the bones of my father, Abu Abdullah, breaking. But one daughter of Hussein, she wanted to stop them. She couldn't. Why? Because her dress was on fire. So she was running from one tent to the other. Hamid bin Muslim narrates, he said it was that night, the night of the 11th. He says that I saw this one girl, her dress was on fire, because you know what Umar bin Sa'ad did? After mutilating the body, he set the tents of Hussein on fire so the woman would burn in those tents. So then Hamid bin Muslim says, I saw this young girl, her tent, her dress was on fire. I came to her, I said, here, take some water. She looked at me and she said to me, oh man, are you with us or are you against us? I said to her, I'm neither with you nor am I against you. She said to me, oh man, then why do you offer me the water when my father died thirsty with no water given to him? Then he said, she looked at me, she said to me, oh man, have you read the Quran? He said to her, yes. She said to him, have you read the ayah, فَأَمَّا الْيَتِيمَ فَلَا تَقْهَرَ, as for the orphan, do not ever hurt the orphan. He said to her, yes, I've read that ayah. She said, I am the orphan of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Then she said to him, oh man, may I ask you another question? He said to her, yes, go ahead, ask me. She said, have you read the ayah, وَأَمَّا السَّائِلَ فَلَا تَنْهَرَ, when someone asks you a question, don't ever reject that question. He said,
said to her, yes, ask me. She said, oh man, show me which way is the land of Najaf, I beg you, show me. He said to her, why? She said, they say to me that my grandfather Ali ibn Abi Talib is buried over there. He said to her, I'm sorry, the land of Najaf is too far away. She said to him, if you cannot take me to Najaf, then show me which body belongs to my father out of all these bodies. This Sukaina on the night of the 11th of Muharram, Shama Ghariba, Sayyidah Zainab was trying to sleep. She got up, she tried to sleep, got up. She looked around, she couldn't find any of the children. Or she found some in one area, others in another. But then she looked, where is Sukaina? She came to Rabab, where is Sukaina? She came to Layla, where is Sukaina? From a distance, she saw a girl sleeping by one of the bodies. When she got closer, she noticed it was Sukaina. She said to her, Sukaina, why are you here? She said, when did you know me to fall asleep without sleeping next to my father when he was alive? The narrations also mention that some of the ladies who had companions who had died, some of these ladies, they were in the tent, they were trying to sleep. And one of them was Daylam, the wife of Zuhair ibn al-Qayn. She was trying to sleep. She woke up. She was trying to sleep. She woke up. Imagine, my dear brothers and sisters, we're in Toronto. We're in a majlis. We have shelter. We have cover. Zainab and the ladies had no shelter on a night like this. They were in the wilderness. They had no cover for them. Daylam woke up. All of a sudden, she looked at her servant. She said, my dear servant, come here next to me. She said, what is it? She said, here's a piece of cloth. I miss my husband, Zuhair. Go and cover his body, I beg you. That servant got up. The moment that servant got up, what did she do? She got up and she went out to look for Zuhair's body. A few seconds later, she came back. Daylam said to her, did you cover my husband's body? Please tell me. She said to her, I'm sorry, I didn't. She said to her, why? She said, as I was about to cover Zuhair's body, I saw the holy body of Abu Abdullah with no cover on it. I thought to myself, how can I cover Zuhair's body when the son of Fatima al-Zahra lies on the ground with arrows all over his body? I leave you with this narration. Rabab was trying to sleep, but a mother cannot sleep without her baby. A mother is used to the tears of her baby. A mother is used to waking up in the middle of the night to check on her baby. Any mothers over here will know that the night is not complete until you get up to see your 6-month-old baby. She got up. Zainab had gotten up. She looked around. Where's Rabab? What's wrong? Where is Rabab gone? She found Rabab. She said to her, Rabab, why are you not asleep? She said to her, Zainab, I have some water now. I want to find my 6-month-old baby. I want to quench his thirst. I want to see that arrow didn't destroy his neck. But in all of these, Zainab remained a flag for Al Muhammad. The women were falling, Zainab remained up. But even Zainab has a heart that breaks. That night she tried to sleep. The narrations mention in the middle of her sleep, in the middle of what seemed like a dream, she saw a man dressed in black coming towards the tent. When she saw that man coming towards the tent from far away, the narration, what do they mention? She looked up. She said to him, oh man, Abbas and Hussein are not here to protect me. Oh man, I beg you, don't attack me. Oh man, I beg you, don't strike me. He said to her, Zainab, don't you recognize your father Ali in front of you? Allahu Akbar. She said to him, father, where were you when Abbas fell by the Furat? Where were you when the 6-month-old baby died? Oh father, where were you when Shimr sat on the chest of my brother to behead him?
May Allah bless your tears. Any haja you have, anything. Anything that you have, ask it now with the tear. With the tear. Any haja you have. Believe you me, this is tested. The tear for Aba Abdullah with a dua. Anything. There's none of us here who don't have concerns, worries, dilemmas, troubles, internal, external, family. Anything that you have, read it with the tear. Our majlis continues tomorrow night and Saturday night. May Allah bless Muhammad and Al Muhammad for their service to the religion of Islam. Ya Allah, allow us to receive the shafa'ah of Muhammad and Al Muhammad. The originators of this majlis, may Allah bless all their hard work. Ya Allah, allow our eyes to see the land of Karbala. On a night like this, Shama Ghariba, Ya Allah, protect our children and our women in our memory of Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala the Surah Al-Fatiha, but before it, the loudest of your salawat.